You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. House of All Marine Radio. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you had a good weekend. And so welcome to the program today. Yeah. It's official. I've finished every home improvement project I could conceive of. And even some after that. That's right. So I'm like, I got nothing to do. Every single one of them. It culminated yesterday in a fight with fluorescent lighting. Yeah. So I have an 8 foot long fluorescent light in my garage. And good morning to you. The first Monday of May, by the way, the month of Mary for all you Christians out there. So I had to buy a lawnmower over the weekend. Yeah. I bent the drive shaft on my lawnmower after I took out a series of, like, I'd call it, they start out as shrubs, right? Then they grow. I don't know. I guess as tall as you want. These are about, they were about 8 feet tall. And they grow vertically. So my neighbor hates them. So I cut them in half a few years ago. And they're dirty trees and whatnot. So, and there's like, I don't know, a dozen of them planted between our yards. So I took my cordless saw and I hacked them off at the soil at the soil level. So I was mowing over them, and there was enough of one stump that it stopped the blade of my lawnmower. So when it stopped the blade of my lawnmower, it bent the drive shaft. Right? And so that's not good. So I look up, what do you do to, you know, how do you fix it? And the answer is you unbend it. How do you unbend it? Well, you unbend it with a hammer. I can do that. Like, hammer, that's my specialty. So anyway, it didn't work out. Right? So you try to pull it. It doesn't spin right. It's bent. So now you can take it. You can go try to get it repaired and all the rest of it for, I don't know, spend $100. But for $200, I can get a new lawnmower. And then if I take care of it, then I can sell it, right? I can sell it for probably $100, you know, in a year or two when I move. And if I don't have a lawn, then I don't need it anymore. So anyway, I had to buy a new lawnmower. And so I did. You don't have to prime it anymore. You just, like, pull the thing. You don't have to pull it hard. You just go like this. I was like, nice, nice. I was putting it together. My neighbor, Rick, who's a Vietnam guy, he's the A4 pilot from Vietnam. He comes over. He's checking it out. He says, you should put a Marine Corps sticker on the front of that. I said, what? He said, yeah. I said, oh, so the grass knows who's mowing it down? He said, yep. I said, all right. So I went and I got a sticker, a small Marine Corps sticker I have. And, I gave Rick one. Here, don't put this on just anything. He said, I won't. So anyway, I got a new lawnmower. So I did that. And then the last thing on my list was this fluorescent light in my garage. So I dismantle it. And I think, well, I mean, this thing's old. I mean, and what happened was in fluorescent lighting, it's pretty simple stuff, right? You have the sheet metal that holds it. Then you have the apparatus that holds the bulb. And then you have this thing called the ballast. Now, in my light, the ballast somehow or other had a meltdown. You could smell it and all the rest of that nonsense. So I undo it. And I think, well, I'll just buy the whole thing. I mean, how much can it cost? Like, so... It says, I look up online, it says, you know, $40. I'm like, $40, full thing. I mean, why would I mess with it? So I go down, I buy one, bring it home. Lo and behold, the ballast isn't a part of it. I'm like, shit. So now I got to go back to Home Depot, exchange that, and find the right ballast, which I do. I come back. Now, let me just tell you what's beautiful and wonderful about the way I do home improvements. I will eventually conquer... Whatever I endeavor, right? I will conquer that. It will bend to my will, right? After I exhaust all other means. So normally, if you're smart, what you do is you would go check out the wiring diagram as you go to put this thing in. Oh no, to me, I would do it intuitively. So you have the positive and negative line. Got that. I look at how the old one's wired, okay, take a couple pictures because I'm smart, and then I begin to plug wires in it, and it doesn't work. And then I re-plug them in, and then I reroute it, and then it doesn't work. So then I decide maybe I should read the instructions that come with this ballast. And there's a wire diagram. And so I take the wire diagram, except it's really small and it's on the battery, so I have to take a picture of it, and then I blow the picture up. And then I email it to myself, and then I come in, I sit down in PowerPoint, and I actually make a picture of the wire diagram with the color of the wires. That's right, that's what I did. I go out, I hook it all up, gaboosh, it works. And I threw a fit because I'd been working on this son of a bitch all afternoon. So I threw a fit. I scared the dogs. Right? I scared the dogs. I walked in and I yelled at my daughters. And I'm like, who's the man? I woke Colleen up. She's like, I said, who's the man, Colleen? And she's like, you are. I'm like, that's right. Why am I the man? Because after exhausting every other possibility, I will figure this out and I will make it work. And they're like, oh my God, get in the garage where you belong. So, yeah, it took me all day. Then I had to reassemble it and put it back up, which was another event, but not as eventful as the initial one. So, anyway, yeah, so now I virtually have no household projects, none. Yeah, I even repaired a doggy gate yesterday. It's actually a kitty gate, but I don't have kids that have dogs. And I had to get a second gate to put on top of the first one because Joe will vault over the lower one. Yeah, he's not man enough to go over both of them. So anyhow, there's a big protest in Huntington Beach on Friday. But I'd got my new lawnmower, and I was mowing my lawn. I got an email from one of my Marines like, are you in Huntington Beach? I'm like, No, I mow my lawn. I said, why? Is there a protest? He said, yeah. I was like, shit. But I was worn out after that. And I hadn't worked out, so I had to work out. And then Colleen and I went and got dinner, so I didn't make dinner. But Saturday, we went to Home Depot. We went to Big Five Sporting Goods for something. And then we went to McDonald's. And then we went to Huntington Beach. And there was people up there Saturday. So we stopped and honked and did our protest thing. And we went back there Saturday night with my older daughter, with Catherine. I said, hey, if there's a protest, you're getting out, right? And you're going to scream and yell. She's like, I am so not doing that. I said, oh, you are? Or it's a long walk back to Costa Mesa there, princess. She's like, Dad, I am not. I said, yeah. Colleen said, you have to. So, anyway, but there wasn't a whole lot going on Saturday night in Huntington Beach. So, anyway, fair weather protesters, but stupid, just stupid on Saturday. And the more you read, the stupider it got. So, you have most of the cities here in Orange County participating in a lawsuit against the governor of the state in order to reopen businesses. And the most damning, you know, evidence was, if you talk to law enforcement and first responder people, they said the week before when there was a picture taken with a telephoto lens from a pier and it looked like people were right on top of each other, you know, the law enforcement people said, hey, 90% of people were doing the right thing. You know, there were small stretches that were not. And we, you know, we went ahead and handled that. And so my own opinion is that's pretty frustrating. That's pretty frustrating when that's the story that's coming out, and then the governor takes action on it. And so you had other counties in the northern part of California that straight up said, we're not doing it, and refused to shelter in place and do all that. So anyway, just stupid. Hopefully it'll end sometime soon. Now that brings me to the subject of the first 30 minutes of this program, and that is, so, all states, or a lot of states, you know, do the shelter at home thing, right?
Right.
Okay, so coming out of that, then what happens? Well, coming out of that, what happens is, so you hit pause. So this virus starts to go through your nation, and by making everybody stay at home, you hit pause. We're not going to allow it. And so so what happens when you hit play? What is going to happen to the numbers? Well, all the numbers are going to go up. The question is, will the rates go up? Right? Will the rate of infection go up? Will the rate of death go up? Right? So now on the back side of this, the numbers have to go up. More people are going to get it. Okay, Now, if you can protect the vulnerable, hopefully your mortality does not go up as your numbers of infected people. But the people getting infected are the people that can get infected, right? Does that make sense? It should make sense if you've been following this, okay? And we protect the people that can't be, right, that can't be infected. And those are people with high comorbidity factors, right? And so I think we all, I mean, it's really interesting as you kind of move around now. I mean, people just, they figure it out. They adopt. When I went to buy my home, my lawnmower, some dude was like throwing a fit about wearing his mask. He was trying to return something. And, you know, the poor guy standing in front of Home Depot, they're like, hey, you can't come in here without a mask. And the guy starts throwing a fit. And I thought it was going to be a fight. So I stopped. In case, like, the security guy struggled with the guy, I'd jump in and third man into a fight anytime. So anyway, and I did not materialize. So I went on about my business. But, but people just figure it out. And they're, you know, they're happy. And the people I've encountered are courteous. And so, I mean, so, but again, the problem in the country is that 42% of the country is categorized as obese. Percentage of Americans that are obese read my mind. Fast facts. Obesity. Percentage of adults aged 20 and over with obesity in the United States, 39.8. 40%. And that's an old statistic, 2015 to 2016. We're fatter by now. Percentage of adults aged 20 and over with overweight, including obesity, 71.6%. Yeah. Children, percentage of adolescents aged 12 to 19 obese, 20%. Percentage of children 6 to 11 that are obese, 18%. So, I mean, in theory, they've got to stay at home. 40% of the country got to stay at home. Right, so that's a problem. And then what happens? So the numbers are going to go back up. Then do we shut it down again? Now, so, and the answer to that is no, you can't. Well, Mac, geez, what are you advocating, that people die? So what I'm advocating is kind of interesting, because one of the things I read over the weekend, actually what I do is I copy these things. I copy these things and I paste them into a Word document, and then I highlight them. So I think on Friday, I read an article that was written by Tom Friedman, right? Tom Friedman, smart guy, right? Headline, is Sweden getting it right with its COVID-19 approach? Subheadline, the United States should be debating on the different ways and costs of acquiring immunity. Tom Friedman. All right. This is from the article. In case you've missed it, Sweden has taken a radically different approach to dealing with the coronavirus. It has essentially opted for a strategy of herd immunity through exposure. Now, I'm going to tell you that in the article that I'm going to cite for you in a second, from, it's an interview with the head of Sweden's Ministry of Public Health. He says that's not their strategy. So I think, but it's going to be a byproduct of their approach. Okay. So that's not their strategy, but it's a byproduct. So anyway, so Friedman's not right, but he's kind of sort of right. This strategy posits that most people under age 65 who get the coronavirus, if they do not have major pre-existing medical conditions, will either experience it as a typical or tough flu, or completely asymptomatically. And the number who will get so sick that they will require hospitalization or emergency care will reliably be less than the number of beds needed to care for them. So our healthcare system will be able to handle it. He goes on. So if you do your best to shelter and sequester all those over 65 and those with serious pre-existing conditions, notably heart and lung disease and diabetes, and let much of the rest of the population circulate and get exposed and become naturally immune, once about 60% of your population has gone through this, you'll have herd immunity and the viral transmission will be blocked. Now, that assumes that immunity for some period of time results from exposure, although that's not a fact yet. Most experts believe that that's a fact. Okay. He goes on, after all, herd immunity is our goal, either from vaccination or from enough people building natural immunity. Those are the only ways it's achieved. The upside of Sweden's strategy, if it works, is that your economy does not take such a deep hit from lockdown. Anders Tegnell, T-E-N-G-N-E-L, chief epidemiologist for Sweden's public health agency, said in an interview published in USA Today on Tuesday, quote, "We think that up to 25% of the people in Stockholm have been exposed to coronavirus and are possibly immune. A recent study from one of our hospitals in Stockholm found 27% of the staff there are immune. We could reach herd immunity in Stockholm with a matter of weeks." Friedman goes on. Here's the stone cold truth. There are only different hellish ways to adapt to a pandemic and save both lives and livelihoods. I raise Sweden not because I think it has found the magic balance. It is way too soon to tell. But because I think we should be debating all the different ways and costs of acquiring immunity. Then he quotes a doctor by the name of David Katz. Herd immunity has historically been nature's way of ending pandemics. Katz goes on, we need to bend with nature, even when we as a species are responsible for unleashing these forces. That means a design strategy based on risk profiles of phasing back to work those least vulnerable so we gradually cultivate the protection of herd immunity while concentrating our health services and social services on protecting those most vulnerable until we can sound the all clear. Now, that's Friedman's article. So I saw this interview cited Anders Tegnell. Right. So remember I told you that years ago, I never read a footnote. And then I found out in my life that that means, hell, it's all in the footnotes. Follow the footnotes. So that's what I did. So I look up this interview with USA Today. It's done by somebody by the name of Kim Helmsgaard. And she's got two A's in her name, so you know she's Swedish or Norwegian or something like that. The article starts, Sweden, unlike its Nordic neighbors, Denmark and Norway, and virtually every other country in the Western world, has resisted extensive lockdown restrictions to stem the coronavirus outbreak. Instead, it's largely kept society, including schools and restaurants, open, and relied on voluntary social distance measures that appealed to the public sense of restraint. Polls showed the strategy is broadly supported by most Swedes. So here's the interview, and I just want to read. The question is, what's the latest from Sweden? Tegnell, we're doing two major investigations. We may have those results this week or a bit later in May. So this is last Tuesday. We know from modeling and some data we already have, these data are a little uncertain, that we probably had a transmission peak in Stockholm a couple of weeks ago, which means that we're probably hitting a peak of infections right now. We think that up to 25% of the people in Stockholm have been exposed to the coronavirus and are possibly immune. A recent study from one of our major hospitals found that 27% of the staff there is immune. We think that most of those immunities are from transmission in society, not the workplace. We could reach herd immunity in Stockholm in a matter of weeks. So that's the longer quote that is pulled out in the Friedman article. Next question. What is Sweden's COVID-19 strategy? Here's the response. It's really interesting. We are trying to keep transmission rates at a level that the Stockholm healthcare system can sustain. So far, that has worked out. The health system is stressed. They're working very hard, but they have delivered health care to everybody, including those without COVID-19. That is our goal. And then I say this for emphasis because this is what he says. We are not calculating herd immunity in this. So he goes on, with various measures, we are just trying to keep the transmission rate as low as possible. The amount of cases has been stable for the last 2 or 3 weeks. We believe herd immunity will, of course, help us in the long run, and we are discussing that. But it's not like we're actively trying to achieve it, as it has been made out by the press and some scientists. We are going for a sustainable strategy, something we can keep doing for months. Coronavirus is not something that is just going to go away. And this is the important part that Americans need to understand, right? Our strategy is not sustainable, right? We've hit the pause button and we've all stayed inside. Well, it's still out there. It ain't going away. And I think that this point that he makes, coronavirus is not something that's just going to go away. Any country that believes it can keep it out by closing borders, shuttering businesses, etc., will most likely be proven wrong at some stage. We need to learn to live with this disease. Next question. What has voluntary social distancing meant to the Swedish economy? And I don't highlight anything, so I'm not going to really talk about that. Although Sweden's economy has taken a hit, like everybody else's. Next question. Has Sweden's voluntary measures led to more deaths more quickly than if it had imposed a mandatory lockdown? Now, let me tell you the illusion of this. So Sweden may have more deaths now, but they are a month ahead of most of the United States. So the question is going to be, let's compare death rates in a month to Sweden when people hit the play button, right, after we've done this pause thing. And then let's compare death numbers. So they are marginally higher than their Nordic neighbors, right? So the question is, have they led to more death? His answer, we don't really know yet. What the crisis has shown is that we need to do some serious thinking about nursing homes because they have been so open to transmission. And then in parentheses, more than a third of Sweden's COVID-19 fatalities have been reported in nursing homes. However, this is only indirectly related to our strategy because the strategy was to protect those people, and that part of it did not work out. This is perhaps not a surprise because there has always been a problem with running these homes safely in Sweden going back a long time. That's something we are taking advice on now and we intend to do better on. So what he's saying is essentially we've had a problem, like most of the world has, with senior living facilities. And that's because we don't pay people very much to work there. And they try to do it on the cheap. And you get what you pay for. And look at the horrific stories. And what we did was, in the United States, our approach was we had everybody shelter in place, right, by hitting the pause button. So we sheltered the least vulnerable people, and we kind of didn't pay too much attention to nursing homes until some of those stories began bubbling up. And you had people working there that brought the disease in, I would think. Maybe you had family members that brought it in, or the virus in, and then it circulated through those senior facilities, and they're just not in a position to fight it. And it's amazing that through none of the previous viruses that went through the country, that there was a set plan in place to control something like this, right? Right, so they have to rethink the way they do nursing home and long-term care. Final question is, what if your strategy fails, plan B? And his response is, it's not just me running this, it's the entire agency and the government. So far, everyone is reasonably okay with it, with the exception of a high proportion of deaths in nursing homes. But it's also accepted that this is to a great extent a separate problem. Crucially, the public is on our side. So they break out, and his answer is, we break out, we have a separate problem with all illnesses and nursing homes. And this has certainly highlighted that problem, which to me makes sense. What's happening now is that many countries are starting to come on to the Swedish way. They're opening schools, trying to find an exit strategy. It comes back to sustainability. We need to have measures in place that we can keep on doing over the long term, not just for a few months or several weeks. So it's an interesting article. I will put that in the post, and for the first hour, you can read the whole thing. So and I'll put Friedman's article in there as well. I'd recommend both to you. So the question is. You know, on Friday we were talking about, so what numbers do you pay attention to? You pay attention to rates, not numbers, because the numbers are going to go up, right? So what are the rates? What's going to happen to the rates of ICU and what's going to happen to the rate of death, right? And that's going to be the question, are we practicing, especially with the most vulnerable, the things we need to do? So we shall see. I got a number of emails I want to thank you for and messages about my daughter's appearance on the program on Friday, filling in for the chef. There's a few things, subjects we didn't get to. But anyway, I want to thank everybody who took the time to email. And I forwarded everything that I got to them. And their response consistently was, give the people what they want. Give the people what they want. They want more of us. I said, you two just need to settle down. You two need to settle down. The other question is, you know, would you see states go ahead and lock themselves up again and cease economic activity? I think that, and that's why I say, I mean, I don't know that we've seen, you know, communities have, you know, this is artificial. What we've done is this pausing, you know, this pausing the country, right? And again, to me, it's a tactical pause while you get your shit together. Okay, now the real work has to happen. And the real work should be what? Protecting those that are vulnerable, allowing those that aren't least vulnerable to go out and begin to develop the herd immunity thing. That's the hard part. And it's really going to be hard in homes where you have multi-generations, where grandma and grandpa live. And there's young kids that are going to school and are out and about. And then they come home and they're asymptomatic and they infect their grandparents. How do you do that? I think those are the kind of discussions that you need to have happen. Grandma and grandpa got to stay in their room. They got to go, you know, can they go live with somebody else for a while? So anyway, those are hard, but you can't, and to me, what Anders Tegnell says is very important. You have to have a strategy that you can sustain, and you cannot fiscally sustain the course of action that the United States has embarked on. You simply can't. I mean, I can't imagine. So what's going to happen to all these landlords that own apartment buildings and, you know, and they're, and the people that live in those buildings haven't paid rent? What's the bank going to say to them? And is the person who owns the building going to smell them the keys and say, go ahead, you collect it. Good luck. Bank want that problem? Probably not. Because there's a whole lot of shit that'll go with it. Bank appoint somebody to take care of it. They start getting the complaints about the pipes aren't getting fixed and all the rest of this stuff. So I mean, those things have to be contemplated as the nation's got to go back to work. And it has to have a sustainable strategy. And I think the Swedes are further down the road than anybody. What's interesting is that they didn't go down that road in order to develop herd immunity. What they did was they went down that road in order to manage the load of their medical force as well as balance, you know, the economy and, you know, the fiscal requirements of the nation. So it's kind of interesting, kind of a much more holistic, if you will, a much more holistic approach, and dare I say a little bit more courageous and less Chicken Little-esque. You know, they didn't have the mayor of Stockholm going on TV and holding press conferences and telling everybody that this was coming to their nation, saying that he needed 30,000 ventilators and ultimately only used 6,000 of them. So, yeah, building hospitals that never got used, having a ship sent to New York City that treated 181 people, right? They didn't have that going on. So I think the overreaction you can forgive initially, but now it's time to course correct and get this thing pointing in the right direction and do the right thing. So good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this Monday morning official. This is dedicated to my two lovely daughters, Catherine, Colleen. Thank you for coming on Friday and graciously and gracing the program with your personalities and filling in for the show.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather here. Currently in Quantico, it is sunny and 72 degrees. Down at Camp Lejeune, it is sunny and 80 degrees. 29 Palms, sunny and 74. Camp Pendleton, partly sunny and 61. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 71. Everybody warmer. Camp Butler on Okinawa, dark cloudy, 74. Lash Garga, sun setting, clear and 83. And partly sunny and 92 degrees in the Al Anbar province of Iraq. Here at the home of All Marine Radio, it is partly cloudy and 66. Looking for a high of 76 with some clouds today. 82 tomorrow. 84 on Wednesday. Now, if you go to the longer 10-day forecast, let's see, Thursday's 81. My God. Yeah, so it's going to be in the 90s here in Southern California this week. So got that going for us. All right, we'll take a break. We'll check the news as we continue on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, first edition in May. So we got that going for us. So don't touch that dial. Some interesting stuff in the news. But again, what was interesting about reading the Friedman article and also the interview in USA Today with the Swedish epidemiologist, and Alex Holling is going to join us there, I might add. It's got to be sustainable. And I think that this whole flattening the curve, missed an important part, and that the whole thing is, look, it's not the number of cases. It's ICU admissions and death rates, okay? And so that means the people that are most vulnerable we're not keeping them safe. And that's what you got to do while it kind of washes through the rest of the population. So anyway, more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay, I want to correct a couple stories, okay? Yeah, it's important. One, and you see this headline screwed up all the time, right? The COVID-19 virus is not man-made. All right, exists in nature. Okay, those whatever bats they are, that's where it comes from. Okay, so there's a question of originated or was produced. The question never been, was it produced, right? The question was, did it originate from a lab in Wuhan? The answer to that is yes, all right? All indications are yes. The next questions are, when the Chinese found out about it, what did they do? And you're having more and more intelligence organizations coming out and saying they deliberately withheld the information. They fed the narrative that it came out of that, the Wuhan wet market. It did not. Okay. So anyway, so just a few clarifications on those stories. Okay. And then DHS, they're intelligence people. Now, I don't know where DHS, I don't know if they have their own intelligence arm. I don't think they do. But DHS then says they concealed what they knew to be true because they wanted to buy up the international supply of medical supplies. Nice, huh? I know, the Chinese, man. And the question is, will anybody call them on it? Answer, probably not, because if you call them on it, you're going to pay. And they've already done it. Headlines here on a Monday morning, the first Monday in May. And Alex Holland going to join us in about 14 minutes. The new U.S. Navy is in the Barents Sea for the first time since the 1980s as they push north into the Arctic, right? China's up there. Russia's up there, right? People vying for natural resources, for routes as the Arctic becomes more accessible. So that's going on. UN command investigating whether the DMZ shooting violated the Korean War armistice. So yeah, gunfire breaks out. Right? Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the United States believes the shots were, quote, accidental. The team that's supervising the DMZ, accompanied by Swedish and Swiss members of the Neutral Nations Supervisory Commission, right? The investigation team will assess the events that took place and produce a report based on their findings to determine if a violation of the armistice occurred. So here was the incident. Four bullets fired from the north hit the wall of the South Korean guard post in the central area of Cheerwon, prompting South Korean troops to respond by firing 20 rounds of warning shots and to issue broadcast warnings as well, according to South Korea's military. The South sent a notice via a military communication line lodging a protest calling for an explanation. We haven't received any response from the North Korean side. So anyway, you had somebody shoot four rounds at a South Korean guard post. The South Koreans responded with 20 rounds, and that was this major incident that you read about over the course of the weekend. Another headline, U.S. and Taliban spokesmen clash on Twitter over the terms of the deal. Top U.S. military spokesman in Afghanistan and his counterpart in the Taliban traded words on Twitter over the weekend. In statements that appear to reveal unwritten secret agreements between America and the Taliban, the U.S. military warned the Taliban it must reduce attacks in line with an informal agreement to lower violence by 80% in a letter posted online by Colonel Sonny Leggett. Quote, if the violence cannot be reduced, then yes, there will be responses, Leggett said in a letter addressed to Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mujahideen. Mujahid called the U.S. statements pointless and provocative in a response later in the day. U.S. officials have consistently said continued violence against Afghan troops by the Taliban violates an agreement signed 2 months ago, despite such attacks not being expressly prohibited in the release text of the deal. Leggett went on to say on Twitter, the deal also contains unwritten agreements. During those long negotiations, there were written and spoken commitments. We spoke of all sides reducing violence by as much as 80% to pave the way for peace talks. So anyway, the question is, what are the unwritten parts of this agreement? From Just the News, top of the fold headline, pressure mounts on FBI Director Wray as the FBI's behavior in the Russia case comes into clearer focus. Yeah, that's not none of the stories that came out over the weekend paint the FBI in a very good picture. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And like I said, I hope that at the end of this investigation into it, that there's at least an account that says, this is the sequence of events. This happened. This happened. This group paid for this. This got it to here. This was there. They did these interviews. They found nothing. This guy intervened to keep it alive, linked it to this. And then, you know, and somehow or other, there is a narrative, right? There is a narrative. From Jim Jordan, who's, what is he? Is he from Michigan? Quote, Director Wray owes the American people an explanation about the FBI's misconduct. So it'll be interesting, right? Because, and again, don't believe that's the last of this stuff that's going to come out, because it won't be, right? More of this stuff will continue. Next headline, military COVID-19 cases continue to grow as DOD begins to study asymptomatic transmission. Now, again, it's going to grow, and it's going to grow as, so the fact that people have it, right, is if that's an epiphany to you, or if that's a surprise to you, then you're not paying attention. Again, look at the data from the Roosevelt. 4,800, they had one death. And I want to say, I'm curious, I thought that the number of ICUs, people that they had in ICU, was less than 10. Let me see if I can find it. This is as of April 14th. Three weeks ago, click on tools, sort by relevance, sort by date, which gives me U.S. coronavirus, San Diego. Now, let me see if I can find how many people ICU, because that gives you, Navy officials said, there were 940 active cases, 29 have recovered. And then it talks about the USS Kidd. So, what's next for the aircraft carrier Roosevelt? ICU patients, come on. Hundred percent of the crew tested. As of last Friday, there was nobody in the ICU, but that doesn't tell me how many were ultimately there. Anyway, I've got to find that, because to me that gives you some sense of it. So for every 5,000 people in the military, if you take the Roosevelt as an example, you're going to have one death. And you're going to have, you know, less than 10 ICU admissions. I'm sure less than 20 ICU admissions. And so that should be a model. So the fact that these numbers go up is means we're like starting to function again. So anyway, interesting story is that recruits that are headed to Paris Island are going to spend 2 weeks at the Citadel. Right. In kind of a quarantine before they ship to, before they go ahead and ship to Paris Island. So look for more kind of outsourcing in a separate area. So we're not even going to bring them on the base till we know they're, they've been tested. They know they've been they've been quarantined. So anyway, top five stories in early bird. Then we'll take a break. Then we'll get Alex on. One, accidental naval chief steers his service through a storm. Top story. And so it's kind of, this is an article in the New York Times, but you see naval chief and you're wondering, like, what are we talking about? Well, they're talking about Admiral Mike Gildan. And again, I'll ask Alex for his opinion, but in my opinion, he and the acting SecNav recommend that Captain Crozier get his command back, and the chairman and the Secretary of Defense say, no, you know, we want a full investigation, and then we'll see. I mean, to me, that's a no-confidence vote on Admiral Gilday. I don't know how you see it any other way, but we'll ask Alex, get his thoughts about that. Number two, watchdog group says U.S. is not releasing data on Taliban attacks. That was in the news last week. Number three, too risky to come home, crew of a clean U.S. warship in coronavirus limbo. That's right. And again, while we're still stuck with the pause button on, not knowing how to go forward, right? We say, well, we need more testing, and we need all these crews that don't yet exist. They're going to track down everybody who tests positive. We're going to sick these people. And they're going to trace it. Well, they don't exist yet. So are we going to sit in quarantine for another 6 weeks? Everybody's sitting at home. I mean, honestly, I think it's craziness, right? And then we're gonna continue to for states and the federal government to go into debt to pay people not to work. And to rescue different industries that are going to be destroyed. At some point, you have to look at it and you have to say, hey, we can't do that anymore. Number four, defense budget brawl looms after the pandemic. There's going to be a lot of brawls that loom after the pandemic. Five, homecoming for the 82nd Airborne soldiers returning from the Middle East altered by the quarantine. Yeah, so a pretty low-key event. In terms of overseas operations, three quick headlines. Pentagon warns Taliban of responses if violence continues. ISIS extremist steps up attacks as Syria and Iraq grapple with the virus. Interesting. Again, I say on a fairly regular basis that the that, you know, XYZ leader of ISIS, Al Qaeda, Taliban, you know, you name it, Al Shabaab, you fill in the group, you know, was killed in a drone strike. That is the equivalent, the modern day equivalent of the body count. It is irrelevant, right? It does not stop them. And we should stop, you know, other than, you know, issuing some kind of statement in a summary, you know, put any emphasis on it because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Alex Hollings will join us on the backside of the break. Don't go away. More of All Men Radio coming up next.